A podcast of the cinema.
Hello, Alonzo Duralde, co-host with me of this podcast.
Hello, Dave White, my co-host.
You are a film critic. You are the film reviews editor at The Wrap. You are a co-host of several other podcasts named Maximum Film, which is on the Maximum Fun Network. Also, Breakfast All Day, which is on the YouTube. And occasionally Deck the Hallmark when they let you. Because you're always begging at their door. And why they let you in is out of their own sense of largesse.
I suppose so.
I am a film critic with no other credits to my name. I, too, write for The Wrap.
Yes.
You are technically my boss. And you are certainly the person who assigns me films that sometimes I'm very excited about doing, such as this week's Labyrinth of Cinema, mm-hmm. where you can find a written review written by me of Labyrinth of Cinema on
TheWrap.com
right now, although we're about to talk about it. So, you know, you can get the audio experience, and then you can get the
revel in the printed word.
You can get the radio experience if you go look at it and use your reading comprehension and get to the end.
Try not to move your lips.
Yeah. No, it's fine if you move your lips. Yeah. Moving lips is, that's overrated. That's not the right way to say that. I remember when I was a little kid and people would get scolded for moving their lips when they read. And I always think, why is that wrong? I mean, I don't do it. But when other kids would do it, everybody acted like, oh, you're dumb. And I don't think it should be. I think you should be able to do that if you want to do that.
I think it's because when you're learning to read,
yeah.
If you move your lips while you read, then you will never read any faster than you can say it.
Whereas what? I'm the slowest reader in the world.
Of course you are.
I take forever to read something.
All right. Forget I said anything.
Yes, I shall.
As per your wont.
It's November 1.
It is.
Time for fun.
Yes, that old saw.
Isn't that what everyone says?
Oh, it's on all the t-shirts.
I distinctly remember when we got married in 2008, when it became legal in mm-hmm. California.
Yes.
One of our vows was, on November 1, it will be time for fun. Never forget that. That's part of your marriage.
I'll have to look in Aaron's phone to confirm that, but I don't know.
November 1, time for fun. Don't we all say that?
Yes. Sweeping the nation. Anyway, yes, it is November 1, and it is indeed time for fun.
Perhaps I should turn down my phone.
Perhaps you should.
Well, you know, I would like to, but the problem is that I've been waiting for my doctor to call me back for a week, and she hasn't. And they keep saying, you know, like, well, you know, keep your phone handy so that you can get that call when it comes. It hasn't happened. You know what? It's not going to happen.
You scoff.
I'm gonna call them tomorrow and yell
when
at them.
I tell you to use the email system.
Do you know why I don't use the email system? Anyone who has Kaiser Permanente knows why you don't use the email system, because kp.org is puke and barf.
All right, but here's the thing.
Doesn't work.
If you were to use an email and wait for a call, I think it would just up your odds of hearing from someone.
I don't think there are any odds. I think you just have to catch someone as they're walking past the phone and the nurse holds up the receiver and says, it's for you.
It's a tricky one, but you know, if you pull it off, the rewards are immense.
No, actually, the rewards are also not immense. Everything you're saying is the opposite of what
fine,
you're saying is true.
Fine. You do it your way.
I'm going to. I'm going to call them up tomorrow morning and yell at them.
Great. That's going to get you everywhere.
It's going to get me some satisfaction out of the act of yelling.
Fine.
Yes.
You were gonna talk to me about my Elvis Costello song in my
head. Well, yeah. Okay, so like we'll get to the movies in a minute. Listen, y'all, this week the movies are ones you mostly probably haven't heard of. So it's fine.
It's true.
Even though they're all three of them are good.
Yes.
They're not big releases. Before we talk about the Elvis Costello thing, though, we should say this. Speaking of the big releases that you and I have actually been sort of missing lately, and the reason we've been missing them lately is because press screenings are now back to you've got to come watch the movie rather than
when and where we say.
When and where we say rather than what they did all through 2020 and through up until about June of this year, where they were sending film critics screening links that they could watch at home so that we could do our jobs efficiently and also not perhaps contract a viral infection.
Yeah.
And so a respiratory viral infection that can kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Imagine.
Then they stopped. Then they were like, oh, no, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Come. We'll mostly make sure that everyone is sort of taking care of the situation.
Yeah.
One of our friends last week went to a press screening and someone took off their mask in the middle of the press screening. And our friend got angry about this, but didn't...
tattle.
Didn't regulate. Oh, no, this person did tattle after the fact, which is good.
But not during.
I have not yet been to a press screening, but the minute I do...
It's on.
Oh, it is going to be real on.
Yeah.
I used to be angry about phones in press screenings. You know what? I don't care about that anymore.
No.
You know what I care about? You not killing me is what I care about in a press screening. So anyway, you went to Greenville, South Carolina.
I did.
Last weekend. For the very first time, you traveled for the very first time in, since January of 2020.
Yeah.
And you were there to promote your new book that you have co-authored with the gentleman of the Deck the Hallmark podcast.
Yes.
Bran, Panda, Daniel.
I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies.
It's on sale now.
Wherever books are sold.
It plopped last Tuesday.
Yes.
And we don't say dropped anymore. It plopped.
It plopped.
It plopped. It plopped last Tuesday. And y'all are going to be rich.
Yeah.
Best-selling authors. New York Times, bestseller. That's what's going to happen. That's happening.
It's okay.
It's going to happen. Number one on the nonfiction New York Times bestseller.
You the secret that as hard as you can.
I've already been in contact with the universe. And I've decided, my pal Oprah, who's real into The Secret.
Oh, very much, yes.
We've been conferring on how to make this a thing. Anyway, so you went.
Yes.
And you kept your mask on the whole time. And except when you were in the studio with the dudes.
Yes.
Who also were completely negative for COVID.
Yes.
And then you came home. Like, you went through, like, four airports and four different planes. And you came home, and we tested this week. And not only did you not have it, but you didn't give it to me either because you didn't have it. So we both tested negative this week. And we are about to venture out into the world in some way with screenings of the big movies that are in theaters. Theaters only right now. So
we're going to go at the weirdest hours we can find in the hopes of sitting in the emptiest theaters possible.
Yeah. I'm still not down for the crowded in-person press screening.
Oh, no.
Unless I can be assured that everyone is going to behave themselves and that everyone's going to stay away from me.
Yeah.
But what we are going to do is catch up in actual movie theaters.
Yes.
At, 11 a.m. on a Tuesday morning with the stuff that we're that we have not yet seen.
Yes.
So that we can actually review the films on this podcast and get ourselves kind of reasonably caught up.
Yeah. We have a list.
Like this week, Venom. We're finally going to see Venom. I'm pretty stoked about seeing Venom, and I've just been waiting patiently, and there's no streaming release date announced yet. And it's still like in 3,500 screens around the country.
Yeah.
It's like still the number four movie in the, at the box office.
Well,
so
right now that means not much.
Well,
I think the Rocky Horror Picture Show re-entered the top 10 last weekend.
Really?
Yeah. From Halloween. That's what we're dealing with here.
Anyway, as long as I can be assured that we're going to be like the only people in the theater,
yeah,
we're going to go. And that's not hard to do if you play your cards right. You know how to, you know where to go and when to go.
And when to go.
Like the AMC Burbank 6, the AMC Burbank 8. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And like, you know, are we going to go to Eternals opening weekend? No.
No, that ain't happening.
But are we going to see, you know, The Last Duel in week four?
Sure.
Yes.
That's right. In any case, all those films that you've been longing.
Yes.
Dying to hear.
Please, what did you think about Venom?
I know y'all are waiting. You're gonna get it. You're going to get exactly what you need, exactly what you deserve.
Venom, : there will be carnage.
Listen, we aim to please. They call us the satisfaction team.
No one calls us that.
Oh, you don't know.
I assure you.
Team,
no one.
Team satisfaction.
No one calls us that.
November 1, time for fun with team satisfaction.
You lead a rich fantasy life.
So, but this week, in cinema, oh, you wanted to hear talk about the Elvis Costello thing.
Yes, what were you talking about?
It's not important. It's stupid, so we don't have to.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah. It was just that, like
that ever stopped.
Well, no, it's just that you out of the blue started singing an Elvis Costello song from, like, the 80s, and I was, you know, we just finished painting two of the walls in our living room. We're doing them one at a time.
Yeah.
Taking down bookshelves, triaging books, putting books back onto bookshelves, building up the bookshelves again. And I just have come across three books in the past 24 hours that all have titles from Elvis Costello songs.
Oh, funny.
The High Fidelity.
Right.
Less Than Zero, obviously.
Yeah.
And Imperial Bedroom, which is the sequel to Less Than Zero.
Sure.
And so I just thought it was weird that suddenly you started singing an Elvis Costello song.
Maybe it's because I am looking
at because you're looking right at the thing.
But I don't know. If that were the case, I'd be singing Elvis Costello all the time. Who knows?
You kind of often are, anyway.
I'm not.
Listen, Gen X.
You don't have to exaggerate.
I know how you are.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell me about it, Sonic Youth.
Labyrinth of Cinema.
Yes.
The latest and final film from legendary and prolific Japanese director Nobuhiko Obayashi.
Yes.
He died in 2020 at the age of 82.
Prolific, not so as you'd know it in the United States, because they don't ever release his films.
No, the one movie that he's really well known for in the U.S. is Houssou,
right,
from 1977, also known as House.
Yes.
And if you've seen it, then you know what he's like.
It was remastered and reissued by the Criterion Collection in the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
Had a 35mm theatrical re-release, the whole nine yards. So it is, you know, if you've been paying attention at all to sort of cult cinema in this country, you know Houssou.
And it is, you know, how to describe this filmmaker, how to describe Houssou, how to describe Labyrinth of Cinema. Who is like this guy? Who made movies like this guy made movies?
I mean, stream of caffeinated consciousness is sort of the first thing that comes to mind. There's a real density of imagery and
character and sound and action.
Yes.
And you name it. There's a lot of it.
And a lot of editing.
When you finished watching The Link the other day, you exhaled and you said, "My cup runneth over."
Yeah, it is like being served a 216 course meal.
Okay.
Small plates for sharing.
Would you like to try to describe?
I would not.
Okay. I will try. Keep in mind that the review I wrote for the Wrap,
yes,
also tries.
Yes.
And leaves out so much.
Yes.
Because to describe everything that is in this, like, I left out all the Ozu stuff out of my review. So right. I was like, you know what? Okay.
To begin explaining that would be, why don't you just stick to the outline?
All right, here we go. First of all, it is a 3-hour film.
Yes.
Like 3 hours and 1 minute or something like that?
Something like that.
All right. There are three young men. Mario, Shigeru, and Hosuke. Mario is played by Takuro Atsuki. Shigeru is played by Takehito Hosoyamada. And Hosuke is played by Yoshihiko Hosoda. They are at a movie theater in the seaside town of Onomichi, which is near Hiroshima. Now, this is Obayashi's hometown, Onomichi. It is the theater's last day operating.
Yeah.
And they're doing an all-night war movie marathon. Very much sort of shades of Goodbye Dragon Inn.
Right.
But whereas in Tsai Ming Lang's Goodbye Dragon Inn, where it's a mostly empty theater, and it has become kind of a cruising spot for closeted men. And even there, it's sort of like there's like four of them
right.
in this cavernous, you know, movie palace. This theater's full. Everyone in the town is like, it's the last night, let's all go. So they all go. And these three young men are in the audience. And they find themselves transported into a concurrent dream that all three of them are having, where they are in the films. And they're just hopping from film to film. They are characters in one movie, then they're characters in another movie.
It's sort of shades of, you know, Purple Rose of Cairo or Sherlock Jr.
They are
Duck Amuck.
Or Duck Amuck. They are military people. They are Yakuza. They are
Samurai,
anything, everything. Along the way, they meet a young girl, 12-year-old girl named Noriko, played by Rei Yoshida. And they set about having to sort of rescue her from the various films that they are all now in together. For the first 2 hours, this goes off like a nonstop firework display. It is frenetic. It is thing on top of thing on top of thing, crossed with thing. It is an overwhelming visual and sensory experience, the first 2 hours of this film. The characters are sort of just hurled from one thing to the next.
Yeah.
Lots of digressions. Musical numbers just pop out of nowhere. Intentionally, and this is a mark of Obayashi, intentionally cheap green screen effects.
Yes.
That are meant to sort of disorient you. And not take you out of the cinema, not take you out of the film by noticing the cheapness, but sort of to pull you into this world that he has decided exists.
If there's such a thing as Brechtian special effects, because it draws you into the moviness of it all, like the heightened artificiality of bad visual effects.
everything looks extremely artificial. People are just like screaming and dancing and fighting, and their heads fly off, and they spin around like cartoon heads that fly off
and keep talking.
They keep talking, and then there's people are in a space capsule, and there's giant goldfish swimming through zero gravity in the space capsule. There's narration. Sometimes there's narration, sometimes there's no narration.
There are like references to wartime propaganda songs, and the projectionist in the booth will talk about how he listened to it all the time, but now he can't remember the lyrics.
Right. And then at the end of the second hour, it all starts to slow down. It maintains its sense of visual, like, wildness, but the action moves like from 300 miles an hour to like a reasonable 55. Because in the third hour, they become focused on World War II.
Right.
And the idea of what is going to happen in Hiroshima. And how can we, as participants now in these films, how can we stop that from happening?
Yeah, it suddenly becomes sort of lucid dreaming. You know, where they're trying to control their circumstances, and like they wind up becoming members of a theatrical troupe that they know are going to be in Hiroshima on August 6, 1945, the day the bomb drops.
Right.
And they do everything they possibly can to make them not be there then.
Right. Right. So if all this sounds like too much and you might not get everything, it is too much, and you won't get everything.
Yeah. Believe me, neither you nor I know nearly enough about Japanese cinema to fully understand everything that's
every
being
little
shown
Easter egg
as
that he's thrown in here. And yeah, he's throwing them in like scattering
like
petals to the wind.
Bugs Bunny throwing snowballs.
Yeah. This is a flamboyant, sort of giddy spectacle, and is the antithesis of realism. And he's got, as we've said, history doing this, not just from Hausu, but, you know, he's done years of TV commercials in Japan, like most famously ones with Charles Bronson for an aftershave called Mandem that happened in the 70s.
Go watch those on YouTube if you haven't.
Yeah, already. Like TV commercials for ice cream, but the set of the TV commercial is like this discotheque that's in outer space. And so he's never been beholden to gritty realism.
Yeah.
And you would think maybe that the deadly serious content of the final hour of this film would feel inappropriate given his style of filmmaking. But it doesn't. Because he is ultimately delivering a message of hope and peace.
Yes.
He's been a strident pacifist his entire life. And this film becomes very much about the idea of
creating a world without war.
Creating a world without war. A character near the end of the film asks, when will human beings be allowed to live their lives free from the threat of destruction caused by other people? And so what you have ultimately is this very loving take on how films represent the world and how the world affects films, and also how human beings, inspired by art and film, can work toward a future that is genuinely peaceful. It becomes a very moving story in that final hour.
And he's laid a lot of groundwork thematically and via sort of characters who seem sort of random, as they all reach a certain level of payoff that makes all that stuff work.
Emotional payoff that makes a lot of emotional sense. Yeah. And so while you're being overwhelmed by the spectacle of it, and it is an immense spectacle, you will find yourself after, you know, feeling sort of breathless by the first 120 minutes, when you can catch your breath and it all comes together at the end, you'll find yourself, you know, moved by this, and you might find yourself wondering how he managed to do that, because you think he's just splattering everything against the screen, but he brings it all back in and sticks the landing.
Oh, for sure.
In a way that is incredibly satisfying.
Yeah, it's an amazing high wire act. When I was tweeting about it, that people should go see it, I have referred to it as maximalist.
Yeah. Like super maximalist.
Yeah. Our friend of the show, Mark Hoik, tweeted today, if a fifth of all the LA hipsters who pack every revival screening of Haosu would show up to support the music hall's engagement of Obayashi's ballsy, magnificent epic this week, that would make me a very happy man, and the Lumiere folks would be chuffed too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you are in New York or Los Angeles, you can see this on the big screen. And wow, I can't even imagine this on the big screen. I just watched this on a screener, and it felt maybe not overwhelming, but certainly whelming. It was, you know, my cup did runneth over by the end of it. But yeah, so you can see on the big screen, or there it is now available in virtual cinemas.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Which, like?
Like just... Metrograph and some other ones. Okay. So yeah, just Google it. Google Labyrinth of Cinema.
So you don't have to travel to Los Angeles to watch it at the Lumiere.
No. All right. You watch it at home.
Great.
It's, yeah. Wow.
We done with that review?
I think so.
I guess we are. Yeah. It's fantastic. Roger and Chris wants to buy... No. They don't want to buy anything from you. They want to sell something to you.
Yes, yes, they do.
They want to sell you a couch or a chair, a lamp. So many things.
Yeah.
But mostly couches and chairs.
Pretty much.
Ottomans. Sleeper sofas.
Wow.
Yeah. They can make a sleeper sofa.
Okay.
They do it in their backyard. No, they don't.
No, they don't. They have a factory.
They have a factory in North Carolina.
But they make great furniture.
RogerandChris.com. Custom-built furniture. To the size, the depth, the height you prefer.
Comfy and sturdy.
Real comfy and real sturdy. We're fat, and we own one of their chairs.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just providing you an advertisement right now. We're clients.
Yes, we are satisfied customers.
Yeah. Lots of colors, lots of options for customization. You go onto the website and you start building it yourself with little, you know, click this, click this, click mm-hmm. this. It's easy and also fun. But remember, measure twice, cuss once.
Is that... from the person who gave us November 1 for fun.
Yes. I have a lot of sayings.
You've got all the aphorisms today.
What I'm telling you to do is measure your space.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't just order something and then be like, oh no, it won't fit in my door. Don't be foolish. Be thoughtful and smart with a tape measure.
I got an L-shaped sectional, and I have a studio.
Like we said, they build their own furniture in factories in North Carolina, in towns Hickory and Davidson.
Hmm.
And they, you know, they don't just put stuff in houses; they put stuff in businesses. So, you know how people treat furniture in businesses?
Yes.
Kick it. Kids wipe their little
like it was a rental car.
Ice cream hands all over things. Yeah, that's how they treat it. And so you can have, stain-repelling fabric put on it from them if you want. Anything you want. Well, most things you might want.
Yeah, within reason.
Lots of options.
So many options.
We have the is it Basel or Basel? B-A-S-E-L.
I'm thinking Basel.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
You have the Basel traditional English rural arm.
Mm.
Reading chair.
Yes.
In herringbone wool. Mm. It's extremely tasteful.
Very.
It's beautiful to look at. It's big. It envelops me.
Yeah.
It's like I'm Pee-wee and it is Cherry.
Swallows you up while you curl up with a good book.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't curl up in it, but.
Well, okay.
I'm a little too large to curl up. I don't mean literally. Anything, but, you know, the...
You're so cozy, you feel like you're curled.
You do feel cozy. Listen, I for years I wanted this thing. I wanted a thing like it.
Yes.
And I actually was inspired by a couch in one of your brother's houses.
Really?
It was an English roll arm couch. Hmm. And I was like, yeah, this but a reading chair. Where do I find that? And I just started looking around. And I knew Roger and Chris, you know, existed.
Yeah.
But I'd never bought anything from them. And when I found it, I was like, all right, this is the one. This chair is the one. And then we saved our money. Because this is real furniture we're talking about here. Yes. This is not, you know.
This is the furniture that you carry with you for the rest of your life.
This is the furniture you keep until you're dead. And then someone else comes along and goes.
And then your heirs fight over it.
Then they're like, that's my chair.
No, I want the ottoman.
So we've had it for a few years. I could not be happier. Mm. It's in the corner of our bedroom. I've always wanted a reading chair in the bedroom next to a table with a lamp so I could put my cup of tea on it. Cozy.
You are still excited about this.
I get excited about it every time I sit in it and get to read and not talk to any other human being. A.K.A.
me.
You in this house. Look, I get paid to talk to you here with the microphone.
Yes.
Other than that.
You're not going
to
give it away.
You can speak to my representatives. So that's the end of the ad for RogerAndChris.com. Go there. Buy a piece of furniture. You're going to be happy.
You will.
All right.
Moving on. A24's Lamb went to premium VOD.
Yes.
So we shelled out the $20 to watch it at home. Although that's if we were to get two movie tickets anywhere for $20, that would be a steal.
That would be a bargain matinee in Los Angeles. So.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
So I'm super into this movie. Why don't you talk about what it's about?
Yeah, this film.
But I want you to talk about it.
I'm not going to spoil anything.
You spoil nothing, because this is definitely a film where, as details are revealed, you do this. Ah!
What?
Oh!
Yes.
That's part of the experience.
For sure.
Okay.
This premiered at Cannes this year. Noomi Rapace from
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo
and whichever,
and a lot of other films that are not as good.
Whichever that Alien movie was where she has to give herself a C-section in the robot surgery machine. Anyway, she and Hilmarsnir Gunnarsson, I'm sorry if I got those names wrong, Icelandic folks.
He was in A White, White Day.
Yes.
Although we don't remember him from that.
No.
And he was in a movie I reviewed 20 years ago called 101 Reykjavik.
Yeah. They are a couple. They have a farm in Iceland. They raise sheep, but they also grow crops.
And it's isolated rural.
Super Iceland. Isolated.
There is no one else around.
Yeah, they're like at the foot of a mountain. You don't see anybody. And, you know, their life seems to be fine. You know,
they enjoy each other's company.
They enjoy,
and they do their work and they're happy.
They have their routines. And then one day when they are, you know, one of the tasks is that when the ewes are giving birth, they assist. And one of those births is different.
Yeah.
And they sort of look at each other. Nobody says anything. But Maria, the wife, wants to raise this one in the house and give it a name, Ada.
Yeah.
And they do that, and the sheep keeps coming to the outside of the house, and
the mother sheep,
and bleating, and Maria's not crazy about this, and then Ingvar's husband Peter shows up.
Ingvar's brother Peter.
What did I say?
You said his husband.
Oh, sorry.
Because you just think everyone is gay.
I do. Ingvar's brother, Peter, shows up.
Just because you're a homosexual.
Now, look, it's Maria's husband, Ingvar's brother, Peter. I have noun issues. Peter shows up, is a bit taken aback by the arrangement, but comes to not have a problem with it necessarily.
Yeah.
That's about all I can really get into at this point.
It is all you can say.
Yeah.
Because
this is a movie where, I'll tell you, it does a thing that I love it when movies pull off successfully.
Yeah.
Which is when there is a reveal that makes perfect sense based on the information you were given.
Yeah.
They don't it's not one of those he didn't jump out of the cock-a-doodle car situations. Like, it's all there. Right. It all, when you piece it, like, well played film.
Yeah.
So that is all really great. And the three performances are very intense and also very understated at the same time. Because mm-hmm. there's not a ton of dialogue in this
movie. There's not much speaking at all.
And I have to say, this movie held me in its spell. Yes. Until the very end. And the very end, I'm like, okay, what? And why? And so what did that mean? And is this a metaphor? And I'm not entirely sure it sticks the landing. But then I'm not entirely sure it doesn't, because we saw this in the last 48 hours. And I might need to kick it around for a while. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't see it. Because
you should see it.
Yeah. Because even if I come to the worst conclusions about the ending and its efficacy, everything leading up to that is fascinating. And so it really just kind of captures you, and you certainly aren't going to predict where it's going. You know, it's one of those movies where, like, okay, everything's on the table at this point, so what do you got? Where are we going? And the sweaters are amazing.
The filmmaking here is... And can we say the name of the director?
Yes, it is Valdemar Johansson,
okay,
who co-wrote it with Sjon, uh-huh, S-J-O-N.
And one of the producers is Bela Tarr.
Yeah. Executive producer, Bela Tarr and Noomi Rapace. So, like, yeah. Oh, okay.
They're hanging out.
Yeah.
There is such an atmosphere of, and the filmmaking is so controlled and fluid that it builds this atmosphere of tension and strangeness. Not necessarily dread, because you don't know that there's anything that you're supposed to dread. All you know is that something's wrong.
Oh, I think at a certain point, dread joins the cast.
I'd say in the last quarter of the film, sure. But you know something's wrong. And you also know, through bits and pieces of visual information, that this couple at the center of the film, this husband and wife, that they have experienced some sort of loss.
Yes.
And we don't know exactly what it is, but we see a crib that was meant to be in a nursery, but that has been put into storage. It is then taken out of storage to be put back into the nursery. We see a dollhouse in the nursery. Well, they weren't expecting to be raising a baby lamb as their own child. Something happened before this movie started, and they won't tell you what it is.
Yeah.
And you never learn what it is. All you know is that they need this child. They need this baby lamb to be their own.
And also, the fact that this very strange thing is happening, and it's the only strange thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Like, everything else about the film, everything else about this couple, everything else about this house and the way that they are raising this lamb is so mundane and so regular.
There is also strangeness and wrongness around the edges, in the way that the dog reacts.
I was gonna say, there's
to stuff off screen
that we don't
that
see.
We don't see. Yes. The way the brother reacts to things he thinks he sees, but maybe doesn't, but maybe does. And so it never lets you feel like you know where it's going.
Right.
It never lets you feel like you know what's exactly happening. You have to hang on until the film reveals stuff slowly to you. And even when it does reveal stuff and lets you know exactly what's going on, you may wind up a little baffled near the end, because ultimately the idea here is atmospheric.
Oh, so much atmosphere.
Atmospheric horror that isn't scary, but that is horrific.
It's that A24. It's that A24. Well, it's not a horror film kind of movie that they like to put out.
Yeah.
There is a rawness to the nature here.
Yeah.
I mean, not only that they're just like out in the middle of nowhere, but just these like fields that go on and on and on with the wind sweeping over them, you know, and the tractors and the you know, these muddy paths into the mountain and stuff.
If I had to say it's about something, and all horror is about something.
Yeah.
A very simple, you know, don't let your past trauma guide you into places you're not ready to go. And don't mess with Mother Nature.
Well, yeah. This is a movie that I'm sure vegans will smugly enjoy. People,
I don't think it has anything to do with veganism. I think you're barking up a weird tree there.
I think it does, to the extent of the idea that people who are not vegans think of the animal kingdom as being one that we get to rule over and determine
all right
what they're going to do and be,
okay.
You know,
and I get that.
That's where I'm going.
I get that. Yeah, there's certainly a theme of human beings intervening in the natural world in ways they should not, which is what human beings do planet-wide all
sure.
the time, to the detriment of the human race, perhaps in the next few decades. So, there is an element of that as
yes.
well. I really dig this. I really dig this movie. I was not expecting anything that it gave me. I didn't know what it was going to give me. I will say that I watched the trailer after.
Yes.
And there is one split second shot that will confuse you. But won't give away anything really. But I would also say to you, if you have not seen the trailer, watch the movie. Don't even let that one split second shot of confusing visual information be in your head before you go in.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I put through Robert Abele's review.
Okay.
But because he was so judicious about not giving stuff away,
uh-huh.
when things get there, I was like, whoa, what?
Yeah, we both were. yeah, I'm super into this movie.
Yeah.
It's on, you say it's premium streaming now?
Yes, which means
it costs you $20.
It means it costs $20.
Okay. Yeah. Well, see it with, you know, people you like to feel unsettled by stuff with. That's what you should do.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those rare cases where, like, I'm not 100% sure that it all works, but the parts that do work are so effective that you should absolutely see this movie.
There is a new documentary.
Yes, which you saw and I did not.
Out this week. You have not had a chance to look at it yet, but you can at any time because it is streaming. It's in selected art house theaters, but it is also streaming on projector.tv.
Mm-hmm.
And that is spelled projector.
Yes.
Projector.tv. The Grasshoppers. Screening, it is Grasshopper Distributors' streaming arm.
It's like Grindr, but for indie art house movies.
Correct. Thanks. Bulletproof is a documentary from the filmmaker named Todd Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a lot of documentary shorts. He's done one feature before this that I have not seen. And this is about the industry that has arisen as a response to school shootings.
Ew.
Yeah. Safety equipment, workshops, in-services for teachers, conferences that you go to in Las Vegas to, you know, check out the latest in, you know, Kevlar safety gear for faculty.
Like the one Oscar Isaac goes to in Card Counter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has a very Frederick Wiseman sort of approach to this, to this subject, where the only people, there are only like two or three people who speak directly to the camera, okay. But they aren't talking heads. They are people who are, you know, involved in some aspect of school security.
Right.
There's a woman who, as a response to gun violence in her neighborhood, decided to begin her own brand of Kevlar hoodies. Specifically, she just wanted to make one for her mother and her sister. And then she decided, what if I make this a business? And you see her, you know, working on that business, and she talks directly to the camera. There's also a school administrator who talks directly to the camera because his school system, his school district, opted to arm faculty.
Oh, God.
And keep literal AR-15s in a safe in his office on school property. But you go from thing to thing here. I don't want to invoke the name of Frederick Wiseman too much, but what I'm saying is that it is
fly on the wall.
More or less. There's a score that I found a little intrusive, but there's never a score in his films. But other than that, it's very much, you know, we're not naming names. We're not the Chirons. We're just showing you what people do.
Gotcha.
So you see workshops where teachers have to, you know, practice what they're going to do in the case of an active shooter in the school. You see schools where kids are put through drills, active shooter drills. You see that conference in Las Vegas where people are looking to sell their safety merch to school districts. You see in-service opportunities for teachers. Well, those are not, I say opportunities, they're mandatory. I was a teacher a long time ago. They're mandatory. Where teachers are sort of led through, you know, new protocols of what you're supposed to do. You also see pushback from students and pushback from faculty, particularly when it comes to, you know, school board meetings where, you know, administrators are saying, well, you know, we know that the most likely active shooter is a kid on antidepressants. And so basically treating children like suspects. And you have someone at the meeting who is either a student or a teacher. I couldn't quite figure it out. She's young. Mm-hmm. Or she's like, you know, everything you're saying is wrong. And then this gives courage to another person who's like sitting next to the presenter saying, yeah, I've read all the reports on this and there's no profile. So they're like actively confronting this guy.
Right.
You're also seeing workshops led by super gung-ho, aggressive, you know, learn to use your gun so that you can take it out. You can be the hero, you know. It is disheartening to watch this. It is upsetting to watch this. It is grotesque to watch the commerce that has built up around this, you know, this crisis that we have in the United States.
Not to mention another budget line item that will keep kids from actually getting, you know, books and musical instruments and whatever else.
Exactly. Yeah. When I saw the AR-15s, I thought, is your band, is your marching band getting what they need? I bet they're not.
Yeah.
You know?
How many bake sales are you guys having to have for like, all the actual academic stuff?
The there's also sequences where teachers are trying to be proactive in terms of the mental health of kids by leading sort of guided meditations in classrooms. And then something unusual happens near the end. The guy who shows you the AR-15s in the beginning of the movie, he says, this was mandated by the district. I don't want to be doing this. I want to be, I want money to go to programs to teach kids to deal with disappointment and failure and stress and rejection.
Yeah.
But what we have now are these guns. It's a short film. It's about 90 minutes. And it is not preaching anything. It is just showing you.
Here's where we are right now.
Because the subject of gun violence in the United States, and particularly gun violence in schools, is one that not a single documentary can address from every angle. So what they do here, what Todd Chandler does here, is simply show you what a couple districts are doing, show you what the world outside is doing as a response to violence with guns in schools, and letting you draw your own horrified conclusions about all of this.
I think this movie would give me an aneurysm.
It is, you know, about what happens when the need for security comes up against, you know, businesses that promise that you will be absolutely safe with their products.
Well, and also it's that, this is the thing of like, rather than go after the symptoms, you're just trying to put a Band-Aid on the back end of it. Like, no one's trying to prevent school shootings from happening. They just would rather profit on responses to school shootings as though they were inevitable.
Yeah. We have become a country where no politician is willing to stick their neck out to make a better world.
Right.
The ones that are safely in districts. They safely represent districts where the majority of the voters are for that, and or they are not beholden to gun lobby money or influence. The rest of them are either scared of that, scared of their constituency, scared of losing elections, and they won't do a thing. And the minute Sandy Hook happened, that was the end. Because if the United States cannot respond adequately to a room full of six-year-old children being slaughtered, then we're not. The situation is basically hopeless.
Right, and we've now even seen like the self-destruction of the NRA.
Yeah. And even that doesn't seem to make any
difference.
Doesn't
seem to have stopped anything. Yeah. Because the NRA was always just sort of there to front for the gun manufacturers.
Yeah.
And the manufacturers are still pumping in money to candidates and, you know, all that stuff. So
I didn't feel, I felt informed watching this. But I felt that sense of despair that I always feel when this subject comes up, because this country won't fix itself on this issue. And I don't know how it's ever going to. Again, we decided that it was fine for 30 first graders to be massacred. And that was okay. And we'll just live with that loss.
Yeah.
And then more of them can happen since then, in schools and in churches and in nightclubs and in malls and, you know, music festivals. It can happen anywhere, and we're okay with that. So this is a very good film. It is upsetting.
About a depressing subject.
Yeah. Projector.tv.
Wow. Well,
you're gonna see a film that will make you angry, and it's really good.
Okay.
That's a tough sell. I know.
Yeah. No, it is. But
it's always a tough one when you say this movie's really great. It's going to bum you out so hard.
Right.
Yeah.
We have some letters.
We have a lot of letters.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull them up right now. Here's some of them.
Won't you?
May I? Daniel. Says, I've always enjoyed the Lynch Dune. It makes no sense. But it's so great visually. And that's the truth.
True.
Sandra. Hey, Alonzo and Dave. Sandra from Vancouver. Well, don't ask me how, but somehow this weekend I happened to find the Deck the Hallmark live stream of 20 hours of all things Hallmark. And lo and behold, I discover what Alonzo was teasing with great secrecy in your podcast episodes prior. I have to say, it was really fun watching you guys watch these movies. I did notice only the most subtle of fade on everyone by the time the less than stellar Luke McFarlane joint aired. But OMG, y'all were in it to win it. Much like Dave and Marky, I was endlessly entertained and fascinated by the parade of snacks. Junk food, treats, all-around yummy stuff consumed on a pretty much consistent basis. I noticed undetermined, unidentifiable bags of snacks, a deluxe-looking charcuterie board,
yes,
pizza, ice cream. And those are just the things I clocked. The whole time, I couldn't help but wonder how Dave was taking that in. Alonzo, you must have been in heaven to have all these delicious things, particularly in a climate where Dave is expected to nurse 5 allotted raisinettes during a 2.5-hour screening of Dune. That's the truth. But not raisinettes. Raisins.
Raisins.
Raisinettes are candy.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, congratulations. I'll definitely be ordering your book.
Oh, thank you.
Speaking of yummy stuff, I'm excited for the recipes, as well as the engaging content.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sandra. I hope you enjoy it. Yes, somebody was one of their listeners was nice enough to have me delivered over a couple bags of the Target Good and Gather brand dark chocolate almonds. I had not had any of those in a while.
Lucky, lucky you. Dalen says, while I love my over-the-top sci-fi spectacles, Dune is a piece that I've always felt I could never fully embrace. Maybe it's due to my dyslexia, the way that my noggin processes information, but it was always just a bit too overwhelming for my John Carter of Mars loving mind to take in. You know what? I like that John Carter movie. I don't care who knows it. With that being said, I've enjoyed both big screen adaptations thus far for very different reasons, specifically the way the decades that they were made in influenced their aesthetic presentations. Lynch's was full of lavish 80s color schemes and equally regal costumes. The urine and the feces are stored in the, in the thigh pads.
I bet you that's a line in the book that they just decided to leave out of this the 2021 version.
That's why David Lynch is my man. Whereas Villeneuve's evokes the bleak anxiety-provoking times we live in. And while neither of them I would consider my personal definitive versions, I respect the heck out of them for existing. Anthony. Subject line, Dune 2021. I appreciated the Dune-centric episode last week and was glad to hear Dave, a fan of brutalist architecture, dig the new adaptation. I found both versions equally entertaining. In Lynch's version, you can feel Lynch both struggling with the material and delighting in the grotesque aesthetic of the Harkonnen family and both the alien and the tech designs. Sure, it's campy and weird and confusing, but despite being a painful experience for Lynch himself, it's a wild ride. And in Dune 21, we've got a $165 million messy, divisive, arthouse hallucinatory experience about messiahs, capitalism, and sandworms. And Jason Momoa is the only person in the film giving anything resembling human behavior. Sure, sign me up. I may have been on edibles when rewatching Dune 84, but you guys, I think I understood the plot this time. And honestly, seeing the Lynch film does help when watching the new version, but also makes the unsatisfying conclusion sting more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Anyway, I leave you with this question. Who should be cast as Fade Rautha, previously played by Sting, in the upcoming sequel? My pick, Lil Nas X.
Ooh.
Bring back that codpiece, and there's your number one opening weekend and Oscar nomination in the bag.
I like the way you
think.
That's
a really good idea.
That is a very good idea. By the way, if you guys want to hear more Dune talk from somebody who actually knows the book really well, check out the Flophouse mini episode entitled If It Ain't Brokaw, Dune Fix It, in which Elliot does his Tom Brokaw impersonation for pretty much the entire episode, talking about all Frank Herbert's visionary masterpiece, Dune. It's really funny and chock full of information as well.
JD says, honestly, I was never more than lukewarm on Dune the novel. But honestly, I don't think the new film either loses much from the characters nor adds more than a beat or two of action spectacle. As a direct translation of the source, this is probably as good as it gets. Mm. At the end of the day, the politics of Dune are the politics of madmen without the humor and knowing wink from the future. Mm. I personally wouldn't mind seeing someone take a more interpretive approach to the material the next time for the next adaptation. And you know there will be a next
adaptation. In 2048.
Yeah.
No, 2058.
Perhaps. The year we make contact with the new Dune.
Yes.
Sydney says, hello there. Now, Sydney is the partner of Jack.
Yes.
Okay. Y'all been following this saga?
Indeed.
The Halloween movie saga? All right. I wanted to clarify a few things from my last letters. I am now not only a fan of your podcast, but a stan.
Ooh, Sydney.
I've always been somewhat intimidated by it because you both simply consume so many movies I can't possibly keep up, but I'm trying. You don't have to try to keep up with anything.
You can just listen to us yammer on about things.
In the mindset of that trying, I have fallen in love with the charm of the pod and listening to you two go back and forth during my workday. You cannot get rid of me now. So sorry that I hurt your feelings. Actually, you know what? You didn't hurt my feelings. No. The minute I finished reading the letter, I forgot that you said you didn't listen to us.
We forget everything that we ever say on this program.
Liver dumping is when your liver, for some unnecessary reason, dumps glucose into your body. This is usually what can cause early morning blood sugar spikes. It has many names. The ones I mentioned in the last letter, a CGM is a continuous glucose monitor. Not to sound like a pharma ad, but it reads your blood sugar throughout the day in replacement of finger sticks. As they say, the more data, the better.
Right. That's the new cool thing, and Kaiser is not giving you the new cool thing. They are giving you finger sticks.
I jab my fingers twice a day. It's very exciting, and I do not mind blood. And I like watching the blood go up into the little
monitor,
the little like suctiony bit on the stick. And I get very excited when my number comes up and it's good, because it means that I'm winning.
Yes.
Thank you, Sydney. Oh, look, a 5-star review.
What?
That I will not be embarrassed to read out loud.
That's right.
Because that's my new thing, not being embarrassed to read the 5-star reviews out loud.
Good.
This 5-star review comes from Starfish Sid. Oh. It's Sydney.
Oh, well.
I mean, I'm guessing.
Probably. Who knows?
Oh, no, it is. I am a new fan.
Uh-huh.
See, now I'm a detective now.
You're a veritable Inspector Clouseau over there.
These releases are, if not the best part of my week, definitely a top 10 moment for sure.
Oh, well, thank you twice,
Sydney. Now we're finished with this podcast.
Yes.
We've done a very good job.
I like to think so. That's the program. Do check out my other podcasts, as Dave mentioned earlier, Breakfast All Day, Maximum Film. I'm More often I am with some frequency on Deck the Hallmark.
Some frequency.
And again, with the Deck the Hallmark guys and I have a new book out called I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. Pick one up wherever books are sold.
Whether you want to or not.
You'll make me happy. And it's a great gift if you have somebody in your life who is into Hallmark movies and you don't want to buy them the, like, you know, made in China popcorn bowl that they sell at the Hallmark store.
Do you have to be a secret Santa for someone at your work? Get this.
They'll be delighted.
And if they're not, they'll give it to someone else.
It all works that way.
Yeah, it's all going to be fine.
You can subscribe to this program for free at Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review the way Starfish Sid did, and we'll read it on the air. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Amazon Music, Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, TheLounge.com, etc. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, thank you, Blue, as always, for our wonderful theme music. Y'all should go check out his amazing new album, Six Tape, at blueBLEU.bandcamp.com. That's our time, but we've got so much more coming up in the pipeline, and we are going to start sneaking into theaters in the middle of the day and catching up on all the stuff we haven't been talking about for the last few months. So, hey, there's that to look forward to. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. And until then,
goodbye.